All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So we are picking up. Today's daf is Mem Zayin 47. Today's daf is Mem Zayin. So we are picking up at the top of Mem Zayin. Our shir today is dedicated and sponsored by Said and Sima Haken. The shir and the refreshments by the Haken family in honor of the wedding. B'sha'a tova u'mitzlach. In just a couple of hours of the daughter Yael to David Issever, Mirat Hashem, the chuppah should occur b'sha'a tova u'mitzlachas, and you should be zochet to have beautiful nachas in the bayis neman b'Yisrael. Beautiful, beautiful simcha. So we'll say. So let's pick up. So we are picking up Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, and we are picking up with Rava Latame. Let's pick up Taima Delo Yadinan. Top line first word. Taima, thank you. Taima Delo Yadinan. So we'll say, remember again, what we established yesterday was that when the Mishnah said that you could collect Chatzi Nezek from the par, or quarter nezek from the vlad, that was talking about a situation where lemaisa, again, remember this is the case where the par is doing the goring, the par is doing the injuring. So remember, this is talking about a case where the two items, the par and the vlad, are owned by two different people. And therefore, what the Mishnah is telling me is, in the event that I can only corner one of the parties for payment, if I'm able to find the owner of the par, then ultimately I could collect chatzi nezek. If I could only go ahead and find the owner of the vlad, then I could go ahead and collect quarter nezek. So it says the Gemara Taima de lo yadinon in havi vlad bahada kinagcha. So the reason ultimately, again, why there is this suffix is because I don't know if the cow was pregnant at the time of the goring. You're supposed to remember, again, this case is talking about where it is the cow that is doing the goring. So I'm not sure, again, was the cow pregnant at the time of the goring or not pregnant at the time of the goring? So aval ip shitalan tahava vlad bahada. But if I were to know with certainty that the cow was in fact pregnant at the time of the goring, and therefore the fetus was in utero at the time of the goring, kinak mishtalim kulei chatzi nezek mivlad. So Rabbi says, in that kind of case, this is a fascinating halacha. Rabbi says, I'd actually be able to collect a full chatzi nezek from the owner of the vlad as well. In other words, what the Gemara is suggesting is the following. If I were to know with absolute certainty that the cow was pregnant at the time that it gored the ox, remember this is the case where the cow is the gorer, then we know that the halacha is that there is a chatzi nezek damages due to the owner of the ox in the event that the owner of the cow was nowhere to be found. I'd be able to collect the full chatzi nezek from the owner of the vlad, because the owner of the, essentially in this case, the owner of the vlad is considered to be a direct partner in the damage of the ox. D'amar Rava, because Rava said, Rava Latame. So Rava goes according to his reasoning. D'amar Rava, Parish Shezika, because Rav is of the opinion that says that if a cow, a pregnant cow, goes ahead and does damage, you can go ahead and collect from the fetus as well. In other words, the Mosai, this only works in a case where, remember again, the fetus and the cow are owned by two separate people. So essentially what we see is Rav holds that a fetus, the calf in utero, is considered to be a full partner in the hezek, in the damage caused by the cow. Therefore, in the event that the owner of the cow is inaccessible to me and I can't collect damages from the owner of the cow, I could collect the full damages. Of course, full damages in this case is what? Full damages in this case is chatzi nezek, but I could collect that full half damages from the owner of the vlad. My taima, what's the reason? Gufahi. Because the vlad is considered to be an absolute part of the body of the cow itself. Therefore, it's considered to be a direct participant in the damages. Therefore, in the event that I can't track down the owner of the cow for payment, I could collect payment for damages from the owner of the vlad. However, the Gemara says this is as opposed to Tarnagola Shezika. But yet again, let's say if you have a pregnant chicken that went ahead and did damage, and let's say for argument's sake again, the halacha is that the chicken is owned by one person and the egg is owned by one person. Eina gova mebeit sasa. You cannot collect damages from the owner of the egg. What's the reason? My taima. Pirsha ba'amuhu. Because the Bible says the egg is considered to be a pirsha. Look at Rashi. Pirsha. Davar hamufrash mimeno. It's considered to be something that is separate and distinct by the mother. Now, Abosai, without getting into all the technicalities over here, we saw this actually in Beitza. And the truth is, this shita that holds that an egg is separate and distinct from the host mother is a din in a fully formed egg. So when the egg is fully formed, pretty much again, the mother is just the receptacle to be able to hold it. And therefore, again, if you have a situation where the chicken is owned by one person, the egg is owned by one person, and the chicken does damages, the damaged party doesn't have the ability to go owner of, to go after the owner of the egg. They only have the ability to go after the owner of the chicken. So what we have over here so far is this yisod of the following. So far what we have is, in a case, let's go back to what we saw yesterday, in a case where the cow and the calf are owned by the same person, then this discussion doesn't get off the ground, because you collect chatzin ezek, and chatzin ezek is coming from one person. The interesting shaila gets off the ground when the cow is owned by one person, and the calf in utero is owned by another person. So the Mishnah tells me, in a case, remember the Mishnah's case is where there's a suffix. What's the suffix? I don't know, did the cow gore the ox when the cow was pregnant or not? That's the suffix. So in a case of suffix, the Mishnah says the most I can do is what? I could collect chatzin nezek from the cow, or in the event that the owner of the cow is not accessible, what can I do? I could collect what? Right? Quarter damages, which might be an eighth, right? Quarter damages from the owner of the vlad. Rava comes along and says, by the way, if not in the case of the Mishnah, if I know for sure that the cow was pregnant at the time of the goring, then according to Rava, the calf in utero is considered to be a full partner in the damages, and therefore in the event that I can't track down the owner of the cow for damages, I could collect full chatzi nezek from who? From who? Yeah. From the owner of the in utero calf. But lest you think that this is a din in all pregnant animals, it's not. This is only a din in cows, and by the way, it might not be in cows, it might be in any animal that's what? That carries its live, it carries its young live. It's probably a better veterinarian, I'm sorry? Live birth animals, as opposed to egg birth animals. Because the way that the halacha views an egg birth animal is that the egg is considered to be something separate and distinct from the mother, as opposed to in a live birth animal, the animal in utero is considered to be a part of the mother. Therefore, again, the calf in utero is considered to be a full partner in the commission of damages, and therefore, if I can collect from the owner of the cow, I could collect from the owner of the calf. But Amar Rava, Rava said, Ain shaman lepara b'fnei atzmo v'levlad b'fnei atzmo. Elo shaman levlad agav par. And I will say, now we're switching the tables a little bit. So we were just talking before about where the pregnant cow is the damager. Now we're going back to where the pregnant cow is the damaged party. So Rava comes along and says that where the ox gores the pregnant cow, so we assess that. How do we assess damages? So Rava says, we don't assess the value of the cow by itself. And the value of the calf by itself, rather, elashaman livlad agabe para. So we'll say, so essentially, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says over in shaman, areshakai, shorshan agachas apara, if an ox scores a cow, ve'epila, and the ox and the cow miscarries, ain shaman kalecha befmeatzmo, sha'olin de mehanezek harbe, aval shaman para mu'uberes kamba haisuyaf etchila, the kama hishava achshav im mesa im chaya. So we'll say, essentially the Gemara says the following. There are two ways you could assess damage. So let's say if the ox scores the cow, and the cow miscarries. So there are two ways you could go ahead and evaluate damages. You could evaluate the value of the cow by itself and the value of the calf by itself. Or you could evaluate the value of a pregnant cow versus the value of an unpregnant cow. Rava says we adapt the latter approach for evaluating damages. When evaluating damages, what we essentially do is we look at the value of the cow when it was pregnant, and now the value of the cow once it miscarried, and the damager has to pay the difference in those two amounts. Why? Shimata omerkein nimtza'ata machish es amazik. Because the Gemara says very interesting. Because if you're going to start evaluating the value of the cow by itself and the value of the calf by itself, and both say that will actually result in a larger liability bill for the damager. In other words, Chazal felt which is logical. It's more expensive for the damager. It's more, meaning there are more damages to be paid if you value the cow by itself and the calf by itself than if you take the difference in the value between a pregnant cow and a cow that miscarried. So too, you see, how do you evaluate? If I chop off the hand of my friend's Eved, Shmuel says, so how do I assess damages? So there are two ways you could assess damages here. So if you look at Rashi, there are two ways you could evaluate damages in terms of a chopped off hand of an Eved. Number one is, how much money would I accept to have the hand of my Eved chopped off? I know that sounds like a strange, how much money would I accept as the owner? In other words, that if I'm an owner of an Eved, also remember the Chazal are viewing an Eved as a piece of property. So essentially, how much money would I accept to go ahead and have an Eved of compromised productivity? That's one way you could evaluate damages, or there's a simpler way, which is what? How much does an Eved with one hand sell on the market versus how much does an Eved with two hands sell? And what's the difference between those two amounts? So Rav is saying when we evaluate damages for a laptop hand of an Eved, we take the second approach. Not how much money would a person accept to go ahead and have the hand of his Eved laptop, but rather, what's the difference in value between an Eved with two hands and an Eved with one hand? So it's Rabbo say, if I damage, let's say Reuven has a vegetable garden, has a tomato garden, and I damage a row of tomatoes. So Rabbi Yossi says, how do we evaluate damages? Same way, you could look at how much does the field cost, or how much does the patch cost, or I can go ahead and say what? What's the value of this patch with tomatoes or without tomatoes? So in all of these cases, the Gemara says, essentially, what we do is, we look at the value of the item as it was, and the value of the item as it is, and damages represents the difference between those two amounts. So we'll say, listen to this. So remember, the way this conversation was discussed was the following. That if my ox gores Reuven's pregnant cow, and Reuven's pregnant cow miscarries. So remember again, what did we say? There are two ways you could evaluate damages. You could evaluate the cost of the cow by itself and the vlad by itself, or I can go ahead and I can evaluate the value, I can distinguish between the value of a pregnant cow versus a cow that miscarried. So the Gemara says, we take the latter approach to the valuation of damages, because otherwise it's going to end up costing the damager too much money. To which Rav Acha says to Ravashi, who cares if it costs the damager more money? If that's the halacha, then that's the halacha. To which the Gemara says, Mishum do amrle, para ma'abarta iskis aziksa, para ma'abarta shaymin alacha. Because the damager could say, look, I damaged a pregnant cow, and so I'll pay you for the difference between a pregnant cow and now the cow in its new state. To start evaluating the cow by itself and the blood by itself, says the damager, there's no reason why I should be responsible for that. My responsibility for damages, or we'll say in general, the way that halacha deals with damages is to make the damaged party whole. Here is what you had before. You had a pregnant cow before damages, now you have a cow that miscarried after damages. My obligation as the damager is to restore you to what you had originally, but not to start valuating the cow by itself and the vlad by itself. Pshita par dechad. So we'll say fine. So pshita. By the way, that is the halacha in general when it comes to damages. So the way we go ahead and we evaluate damages is we look at what the item was worth before damages, and we look at what the item is worth now post damages, and the damager has to pay the difference between those two amounts. Next, pshita para dechad vivlad dechad. So we'll say it's pashit if the cow belonged to one person and the vlad, the offspring, belonged to one person. Also, listen to this. Pitma. Now, remember, when the cow becomes pregnant, the cow gets fat. Now, not to be confused with human pregnancies, right? Pregnant women don't get fat, they just become more beautiful, right? So this is cows. Cows become fatter. So the shaila is pitma. Now, when that cow becomes fat, who gets that appreciation? Because now, again, a fatter cow is worth more money. So I must say, hear the shaila over here. So remember, in a case where the cow is owned by one person and the calf in euros is owned by another person, who gets the appreciation for cow fatness? So says the Gemara, so pitma leba para. So that the fatness obviously goes to the owner of the cow. So that Rashi says, pituma, mashishaman osa shahisa yafem ipne shumna, havidba parahu, the vlad machmase lo asishumna. Because it's interesting, because the Gemara understands that the additional fat of the cow, that's a result of the cow itself, not a result ultimately again of the vlad. However, nafcha, I both say now nafcha is very interesting. Rashi says, nafcha mai, mashahisa yafem ipne nafcha mishan. Nafcha means the animal itself expands. The animal itself expands. Now, I will say, now understand what this means in terms of an animal. This is very important. I've come in over here. When the animal expands, it also means the hide stretches. So, for example, if you were to slaughter, if you were to shecht a pregnant animal versus an unpregnant animal, you would have more hide. Now, it's clear that part of the reason why the animal stretches out is why, ultimately, again, because of the vlad. So when the animal gets fatter, remember, the animal already begins to put on weight, even when the calf is very small, euro, which indicates to us that the additional fat of the animal really is the par itself. And therefore, that additional fatness, so to speak, or the value of that additional, what's the right word, not fatness, girth, or right, really it's volume. It's volume. Ultimately, again, goes to the balapara. What about the actual expansion of the animal, like the expansion of the hind, which clearly is the result that the animal, well, not clearly, but must be in part due to the result that the animal is carrying another animal in euro. Who does that go to? So the Gemara says, Rapapa amar the balapara. Rapapa says, still, the expansion goes to the owner of the cow. Ravachabre dravika amar cholkin. Ravachabre dravika says, they split it. Because it will say, again, that additional amount really is due to both of them. The Hilchasa, Cholkin. The Halacha Rabosai is what? That ultimately, again, the owner of the cow and the owner of the calf in utero split that additional amount. So both sides. So additional fat, additional fatness, girth, volume, that ultimately goes to the balapara, but the expansion, which I both say again, really manifests itself in the hide. That's really where this comes up in the hide. So that ultimately will be split between the owner of the cow and the owner of the calf in utero.
Getting bigger.
I'm sorry?
Increased volume of the part, which is all to the part.
So apparently what the Gemara seems to be saying is, there is a pitma, there's a fat, which is an increased girth of the animal, that apparently occurs without a hide expansion. And there's a hide expansion that also occurs as a result, ultimately, again, of incorrect. So that's how the Gemara can be mechalic. So fat goes to the owner of the cow, but hide expansion ultimately will be shared. Good. Says the Mishnah, Hakedar. So we'll say now we're going to get into a very interesting sugya, which has to do with liability. When people bring stuff into your property, so liability you have for damage that occurs to items that others bring in. So says the Mishnah the following. Hakedar shehechnes kederosav l'chatzer balabai. So we'll listen to this. Hakedar is a potter. So what happens? A person makes utensils, who brings his utensils into the chatzar of Balabai. So in this case, the kedar, the potter, brings his stuff into the chatzar of Ruvain, we'll call it. But what happens? Shelo b'rishus. But ultimately, he does not have Ruvain's rishus to bring the pottery into Ruvain's domain. He just brings it in shelo b'rishus. V'shavra behemtosh Balabais. What happens? Ruvain's animal tramples over the potter's pottery. So what's the halacha? Potter. So what's that? So Ruvain's potter. Why is Ruvain potter? Because the potter brought it in shelo b'rishus. He didn't have the right to bring, meaning, what's that? He's trespassing. So when you're trespassing, you are responsible for any kind of damages that occur. But I will say, ultimately, again, if Ruvain's animal gets damaged by the trespassing pots that were brought in by the kedar, then what's the halacha? Bala kedar is chayiv. Ultimately, again, the potter will be chayiv ultimately for any damage that occurs to Ruvain's animal. Next. Vim hechnes birshus.
Is a door-to-door salesman, for instance, would that be considered trespassing?
So we're going to have to define the scope of this, because, for example, we know that there's an understood rishus that I give for people to come to my door. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into that. Next. Vim hichnis birshus. Rabbi say, if the potter brought in his wares with the rishus ultimately again of... With the rishus, by the way, Bar Fishel's question is a very important one because you see, by the way, that, well, all right, we'll get into it. The truth is, the fact that I have an obligation to shovel my sidewalk, right, even though that's my sidewalk, right? So Reuben comes along, slips on my side, I said, don't walk on my sidewalk. So you see from the fact that legally, at least in Dina de Machus Adina, that I have an obligation to shovel my sidewalk, and if I don't and someone trips and falls, I am liable for that. So we see again why this halach is a little bit complicated. But we'll see. So, but ultimately again, if the potter brings in his wares with the rishos of Reuven, then balachotzer chayiv. Then ultimately again, if Reuven's ox goes ahead and damages the potter's wares, so ultimately, again, Reuven will be, excuse me, right, the Balachot, Reuven will be Chayiv. Next. So the Mishnah is essentially going to state pretty much the same case multiple times. What's the next case?
Amen.
Next.
Hechnes Peirosav. Lachatzah Balabash Lobishus.
So we'll say, let's just keep it easy. Reuven brings his Peiros, his fruit, into the chatzar of Shimon, but without Shimon's rishos, va'achalton behevto shal balabayis, and Shimon's ox eats Reuven's peros. What's the halacha? Va'achalton behevto shal balabayis pater. So ultimately, we'll say Shimon is pater, meaning Shimon that Reuven can't claim, hey, your ox went ahead and ate my peros. Why? Because Reuven didn't have rishos to be there to begin with. Vim huska bahen balaperos chayiv. And ultimately, if Shimon's animal slips on Reuven's fruit, Reuven is going to be chayev for damages to Shimon's animal. Again, why? Because, again, remember, Reuven had no right to have his peros there to begin with. However, ve'im hichnes birshos, but ultimately, if Reuven brought in the fruit, meaning he asked Shimon for permission, can I bring my peros into your rishos? And Shimon acquiesced and said, yes, you may. Then what's the halacha? If Shimon's ox consumes Reuven's peros, then what? Balachatzer chayev. Then ultimately, again, Shimon will be chayev for damages done to Reuven. Next, hechnis shoro lechatzar balabai shalo birishus. Rabbi say Reuven brings his shor into the chatzar of Shimon without Shimon's rishus. Amud beis. And what happens? V'nogcho shoro shabalabayis. So we'll say when Reuven's ox is there, Shimon's ox goes ahead and gores Reuven's ox. What's the halacha? Or shenoshcho kabo shabalabayis, or Shimon's dog bit Reuven's ox. What's the halacha? Potter. It was a Shimon, the Balabas is Potter. Why? Simple, same Yisod. Why? Because Reuven had no Rishos to bring his ox into Shimon's Rishos. However, Nagahu Shor Shabalabai is Chayiv. But if Reuven's ox gored Shimon's ox, then ultimately, again, Reuven will be Chayiv. Because again, remember, Reuven has no right to have his ox there. Nafal Leboro Vihivish Meimav. But ultimately, I'm supposed to listen to this. So same case. Reuven brought his ox into Shimon's rishos. And what happens without, well, I'll say it differently. Reuven brought his ox into Shimon's domain without rishos, without permission. Now watch this. Nafal leboro v'hivish meimav. So I'll say, now let's say Reuven's ox falls into Shimon's water cistern, his well, right? And as a result, putrefies the water. So the water is no longer drinkable. Chayiv. Reuven's going to be chayiv for damages. If, let's say, again, Reuven brought in his ox into Shimon's rishos without Shimon's permission, and what happens? Shimon's father and son are swimming in the well, and the ox falls in the chas shalom and kills one of them. So what's the halacha? Reuven has to pay kofar. But I will say, in all of these cases, if Reuven brought the animal into Shimon's chatzah with rishos, then balachatzer chayiv. Then ultimately, again, the balachatzer will be chayiv if Reuven's animal is damaged, ultimately while in the rishus of Shimon. Rabbi Omer, Rabbi says, bekulan eno chayiv. So we'll say, according to the Tanakama, what it sounds like over here is the following. Then ultimately, again, if the balabayis gives rishus to Reuven to bring his stuff in, then the balabayis assumes responsibility for anything that happens to Reuven's animal when it's in his property. Rebbe disagrees with this, and Rebbe says, "Bekulan eino chayiv ad shekabel alav lishmar." Rebbe, however, says that in all of these cases in the Mishnah, the balabayis is not chayiv for any damages that comes upon that comes upon Reuven's animal, unless, of course, the Balabayis goes ahead and takes upon himself explicitly to watch over the animal. So we'll say, there's a fundamental machlokes at play over here, which is, here's what everybody agrees with, which is what? If somebody brings their stuff into my rishus without my permission, and either their stuff damages me, right, they will be chayiv, or my stuff damages them, I am potter for that. Why? Why? Trespassing. Right? You trespass at your own risk. The shaila is, when I give rishus for someone to come into my domain, what does that rishus imply? The Tanakhama says, if I give permission to someone to come into my domain, what I am essentially guaranteeing is what? Their safety and the safety of their property. And therefore, if something happens to their property while in my domain, I assume responsibility for those damages. Rebbe, however, understands that no. When I go ahead and I invite someone, I give someone rishus to come into my domain, essentially what I'm saying is what? Enter at your own risk. I'm giving you rishus, but so enter at your own risk. Unless, of course, I say enter and I assume full responsibility for your safety. That's the machlokes over here in the Mishnah. Akiva, does that make sense to you? You following this? To remember all of this. It's okay. Baruch Hashem, you're young, and if you start now, you're going to grow up to be a great Talmud Chacham. It's okay. You take your time. Says the Gemara. Kiva, it takes me a long time also. Don't worry.
Doesn't the fact that he gives him rishus automatically mean that he's taking responsibility?
No. Rebbe's saying, I'm giving you rishus to go ahead and enter in, but you bear responsibility for your own safety. You're not trespassing, but you bear responsibility for your safety. Says the Gemara. So we'll say, now we're going to analyze this. And this obviously, you can see, this is a very sophistic machlokes. Just about, again, first of all, what rishus to enter one's property means. So says the Gemara, taima de shelo bishus. Look at Rashi, taima de shelo bishus. So we'll say, the reason why in the beginning of the Mishnah, where let's say again, the potter brought in his wares, and what happens? He did so without rishus. And therefore, again, if the balabayas trips over it, or the balabayas' animal gets injured by it, so the potter is going to be chayiv. So the reason why the potter is chayiv is because he entered the domain of the balabas without rishus. However, the Gemara says, Ha birshus lo mechayiv bal kederos b'niske behemto de bal chotzer. But what we can infer from that is what Rabbi say, that if the potter had rishus, meaning remember, how does the opening statement of the Mishnah read? The opening statement of the Mishnah reads that the potter brought in his wares to the chotzer of the balabais without rishus. So what did the Mishnah say? Therefore, as a result, the Mishnah said, v'shavra behemto shabalabais potter. If the animal of the balabas crushes the stuff, then ultimately he's potter. Vim huska bahen, balak deros chayiv. If, let's say, again, the balachotzer gets injured by the utensils of the kedar, of the potter, then ultimately, again, the kedar is going to be chayiv for that. So the reason, ultimately, again, the kedar is chayiv is because he trespassed, because he entered into the rishus of the balabas without rishus. However, what we can infer from this is, ha birishus lo mechayiv bal kederos, b'niske behemto de bal chotzer. Rabbi said, what we can infer from this is what? That if the potter was given permission to enter, and afterwards, what happens? The animal of the balabas gets injured on the utensils, that the potter would not be chayiv for that. V'lo arminon, kabule kabil bal kederos nitiraso de behemto de bal chotzer. And Rabbi said, what seems to be clear is, when you are given permission to enter, when the potter was given permission to enter the balabas's chotzer, the potter does not accept upon himself the responsibility to make sure that his pots don't injure the animal of the balachotzer. In other words, I have a responsibility to make sure that that I'm not posing an act of danger, but I have a responsibility to make sure that you, balabas, that your animal doesn't get injured by my stuff. So the Gemara says, money. Whose opinion does this reflect? Rebbe, he. So we'll say this seems to reflect the view of Rebbe, because what does Rebbe say? Remember, Rebbe was the last statement in the Mishnah. Do'amar kol bistama lo kabil alay netirusa. Because we'll say Rebbe is of the opinion that what? That when you accept responsibility upon yourself, or any stam permission does not come with liability. Therefore, according to Rebbe, when we'll call balabas gives the kedar, the potter, permission to walk into the chatzer, what that permission means is what? You are permitted to come in, but the potter does not have a responsibility to make sure that the animal of the balabas does not get injured by his wares. But yet, emos seifa, look at the end of the Mishnah. Im hechnes birshos bal chatzer chayiv. We'll say, look, yes, look at the end of the Mishnah. What does the Mishnah say? That if the potter entered with rishus, and then what happens? And then let's say again the balachotzer's animal tramples over the utensils of the kedar, then ultimately again the balachotzer will be chayiv. Who's the pain is that? In fact, Rabbi say asan rabbanan the amri bistama nami ki bule kabel alai netirusa. Both say that affects you with the rabbanan, because what do the rabbanan say? When you give permission for someone to enter into your rishus, What are you doing? You're taking responsibility. I'm giving you permission to enter, and I'm also taking responsibility to ensure that no harm befalls you. V'su, furthermore, Rabbi Omer b'kulon eno chayiv achi kabel alav balabayis lishmar. Yet, we're both saying, remember, Rabbi at the end of the Mishnah says that in all of these cases, so the balachotzer will not be chayiv for any damages that occurs, until he explicitly says that he accepts responsibility. So the Gemara says, Reisha v'seifa Rebbe u'mitzias Rabbanan. So according to this reasoning, right, according to this logic, you would have to say that the first part of the Mishnah and the last part of the Mishnah reflect the view of Rebbe, and the middle part of the Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbanan. And I both say, in general, we don't like setting up Mishnayis like that. We like the Mishnayis to be fluid, right? We like them to reflect the same opinion throughout. The notion that the Reisha reflects the view of Rebbe, the Sefer reflects the view of Rebbe, and the Mitzias, the middle part, reflects the view of the Rabbanan. We don't like that. I'm Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera says, Tavra, this whole thing is broken. It must be that the Mishnah is reflecting different opinions. Rava, Amar Rava says, no. Kula Rabbanani. Rava says, no. In fact, the entire Mishnah reflects the view of the Rabbanan. How so? Ubirshus Shmiras Kederos Kibel Alav Bal Chatzer. So we'll say, Rava comes along and says, in fact, the entire Mishnah is Drabonam. And I will say, we make a distinction ultimately again between the owner of the Chatzar and the owner of the pots. How so? See, he says like this, Birshos, when the Bala Chatzar gives Rishos for the Kedar, for the potter to come in, Shmiras Kederos, Kibel Alav Bala Chatzar. So we'll say, what Rava says is the following. When you invite someone into your chatzer, you assume responsibility over their wares. In other words, when I invite someone into my home, what I am saying is that, Lamaisa, I'm inviting you, and I'm giving you a guarantee of safety. Guarantee of safety for you and for your items. Rava goes so far to say that when I invite you into my home, I go ahead and I guarantee your safety and the safety of your utensils. Afilu nishbarin beruach. Even if your utensils are broken by the wind, I, the balachotzer, assume responsibility for that. Look at Rashi. Afilu nishbarin beruach. The all the antre lecha. Because when I give you permission to enter into my home, I'm saying, come in, and I will watch you. I will guard you. Aval bal kederos lo kabil alei midi. So we'll say, what Rava is trying to suggest, and again, this conversation is not finished by any stretch of the imagination, but what Rava is trying to distinguish is fine. Rava is trying to say, when you invite someone into your home, that invitation comes with a full guarantee of personal safety for you and your property. That I ensure that you will come into my home whole, and you will leave my home whole. And therefore, should anything happen to you while you are in my home, I bear responsibility for that. Even if my ox tramples your stuff, or if the wind blows over your utensils, I go ahead and I assume responsibility for that. However, that is only true for the Bala Chotzer. In terms of when I give Rishus to the Kedar, to the potter, to bring his stuff into my Rishus, ultimately, again, the Kedar assumes responsibility not to be quote-unquote negligent, but he does not assume responsibility to protect the balabas's animals from getting injured on his utensils. Look at that Rashi again. Rashi says, "Va'bal kideros lo kabil alei midi." So we'll say, when you are the invited party, so let's just play this out. According to Rava, and I will say again, we're going to challenge this in just a little bit, but according to Rava, what's happening over here is the following. When I, the Bala Chotzer, invite the potter into my home, I assume full responsibility. That invitation comes with an assumption of full responsibility. I guarantee your personal safety and the safety ultimately, again, of your property. Should something happen, I assume full responsibility. However, when the potter comes in, right, the potter is the invited guest, he assumes no responsibility. So therefore, again, if it turns out that the animal of the balabos is injured by one of the pots, the potter says, that's not my problem. I never assumed any level of responsibility for that. So we'll say, what we see over here now is essentially three different types of approaches. We have the approach of the Rabbanon, who seem to say that even in a case of stam, even in a case of where you invite someone in, there is an assumed responsibility on the part of the balabos for the safety and welfare of the guest and of his possessions. We have Rebbe who says that when you invite someone in, stam, there is no assumption of responsibility, unless, of course, you articulate an assumption of responsibility. We now have Rava, who seems to make a distinction ultimately, again, between the balabos and between the guest. The balabos assumes responsibility when he invites a guest in. The guest, however, what? Has no responsibility. And therefore, again, if the guest comes in and, let's say, the shor of the ox is injured by the property of the guest, so the guest has no responsibility for that. We're going to challenge this in just a little bit. So, let's go back there. Hichnis perosav l'chatzah balabais. So, let's go on. What was the next case? Hichnis perosav l'chatzah balabais. So, case number two was that the owner of the fruit brings his fruit into the chatzah of the balabais. So, Amarav, Lo shano ela. So we'll say, remember, what did the Mishnah say? So the Mishnah said that, remember, if let's say Reuven brings his fruit into the chatzer of Shimon without Shimon's permission, and then what happens? Shimon's animal gets damaged by Reuven's fruit. What's the halacha? The balaperos is chayiv. Right? Why? Because the balaperos was trespassing in the reshus ultimately again of Shimon. So Amar Rav, Rav said, Lo shano l'shoch l'kobahen. When do we say that Reuven is responsible for the damages that his fruits did in the reshus of Shimon to Shimon's animal? That's when Shimon's animal slipped on the fruit. Aval achla potter. But Rabosai, if Shimon's animal ate too much of Reuven's fruit and as a result got sick and died, so therefore again, Reuven is not responsible for that. My taima. Why not? Because Reuven could say, Havala shilotochal. Shimon, who said your animal had to eat? In other words, what the Gemara is saying is like this. If Reuven trespassed and brought his fruit into Shimon's chatzar, and Shimon's animal slipped on Reuven's fruit and got injured, so that's where Reuven's going to be chayev for that. Because it was like, again, the animal walking around is a normative activity. But again, if it turns out that Shimon's animal overate, then, we'll see. So ultimately, again, if it overate, so Lamaise, again, in that case, Reuven could say to Shimon, who said, why didn't you stop your animal from eating? In other words, to stop your animal from walking around, it sounds like you can't do. But to stop your animal from overeating, that's something ultimately, again, that the Baal, that the owner of the animal, should have been more vigilant about. Look at Rashi. Aval achlo yosemi dayo mesa. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Sheshes, so listen to this. So the Baal said, this is Rav's statement. So Rav Sheshes says, Amina, I think, Kinayim v'shachiv Rav amr lahashmaita. I think Rav must have been falling asleep when he made this statement. I will say, now what Rav Sheshes was saying, I will say, this is not a disparaging statement. What this is saying over here is that Rav Sheshes is saying, look, it must have been that Rav works very hard. He has very long hours. And it must have been that this came at the end of a very long day when the matter didn't have his full attention. Why not? This time, I will say, listen to this, because we learned. It's actually an interesting case. I know saying Sam Hamavis if maybe Hamas Khadero. I will say if you put poison in front of your friend's animal, right? Or your former friend's animal, right? I go ahead and I place poison in front of my friend's animal. What's the halacha? Potter medine adam v'chayiv bidine shemayim. So we'll say it's actually interesting halacha. I'm potter in a human court, but I'm chayiv in the heavenly court. What does it mean, we'll say? Because if I place animal in front of someone's animal, that is not direct damage. That's grumma. We're going to see it could actually be called bar as well. We'll discuss it. But it's grumma, meaning it's causative. I'm not actively doing anything for the animal. I'm setting the process in motion by which the animal is going to get injured or die. So therefore, because it's not direct, I can't be held liable in a human court. But certainly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what my intentions were to damage, and therefore I'm going to be liable for that. So the Gemara says the following: so we'll say the reason for that is because we assume under normal circumstances an animal knows better than to eat poison. So when the animal goes ahead and eats poison, so again, there's almost like a certain abnormal activity that occurs over here. Ava peros da'avida da'akla b'dini adam nami chayiv. Shabbos says, so the way the Gemara understands this over here, so Rav Sheshes seems to say that the reason why I'm not chayiv for the case of the poison is why? Because an animal could see that something is not a normal food item, and therefore under normal circumstances would not eat it. The fact that this animal does eat it is a little bit of an abnormal act, and therefore I'm not chayiv b'dini adam, I'll be chayiv b'dini shemayim. But what do we infer from here, says Rav Sheshes? But if you were to put regular food over here, and the animal were to overeat and die, then that would be a quote-unquote normal act for which the person who placed the food would be chayiv. If that's the case, says Rav Sheshes Rav, the distinction you made was wrong. Therefore, when Reuven brings in the fruit without Rishus into the chatzar of Shimon, and Shimon's animal overeats and as a result dies, Reuven should be chayiv for that. Not just in the case of slippage, where Shimon's animal slipped and died, but even in a case where it overeats and dies, he also should be chayiv. The Gemara says, Vanai. But Rav, based on what you just said before, Havish lo tochal, right? Rav, according to you, if again, why don't we say to the owner of the animal, your animal shouldn't have eaten too much, and therefore again, if it dies, if it overeats and dies, it should be responsible for its own fate. To which the Gemara says, so Amri, hu adinafilu peiros tami potter. So Rav would respond, no. The halacha is Rabbi say, not just in a case of poison, but even if you placed fruit in front of an animal, and the animal overate to the point that it died, in reality, nami patr medine adam. In reality, even in that case, you also would be patr medine adam. V'ha kamash malan, da filu sam hamaves nami, delo avida da'achla, chayiv bidine shana. Bosai, here's what's interesting. So Rav responds, the chiddush is in the case of poison. See, Rabbosai, Rav would see like this. The halacha is, if you place fruit in front of an animal, it's interesting halacha, if you place fruit in front of an animal, and the animal overeats and dies, so the halacha is that what? You're not chayiv b'dinei adam, but you're chayiv b'dinei shamayim. The chiddush case of Bosai is the poison. I might have thought that in case where I place poison in front of an animal, that I shouldn't even be chayiv b'dinei shamayim. Why not? Why not? Because the truth is, it's not a food item. And therefore, I would have assumed that the animal wouldn't have eaten it to begin with. The fact that the animal eats it is a shtickle aberration. So because of that, I would have thought that perhaps I'm not even chayiv b'dinei shamayim. Kamash molano, I'm chayiv even b'dinei shamayim. So we'll say, so that's the chiddush of that case. But in Achinami, Rav says, the braisa supports my assertion that lamaisa, again, if an animal overeats and dies, the owner is not chayiv b'dinei adam, but will be chayiv b'dinei shamayim. B'baisim, the other possibility is, sam hamaves nami ba'afrasta dahinu peri. The other possibility we'll say is what? Is that lamaisa, again, is that lamaisa, the poison was put in some type of food item, in which case it was normal for the animal to eat it, but again, it's still, you're going to be chayiv b'dinei shamayim ba'afrasta. So we'll say, so what comes out for our purposes over here is that Rav's distinction stands. So when the Mishnah said the case of where what? And this is how the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch both paskin. Namely, Reuven brings his fruit into Shimon's Rishus without, I should say, Reuven brings his fruit into Shimon's property without Rishus. So the Mishnah said, Shimon's animal gets injured, Reuven is chayiv for the damages. So what is Rav's distinction? Rav's distinction is, that's only when what? That's only when Shimon's animal slips on the produce and gets injured. That's when Reuven is going to be chayiv. But if what? If Shimon's animal eats to the point that the animal overeats and dies, in that case, then what? Reuven is going to be potter. Why is Reuven potter, Rabbi Osai? Because Reuven has the right to say to Shimon, what? What? Watch your animals. So, Rabbi Osai, so we see something very interesting. We've seen this concept before, namely, that even in cases of damages, even in case of damages, where someone else causes those damages, the owner of the animal still bears certain responsibility to watch over his animal. So in this case over here, where Reuven goes ahead and brings in the fruit illegally trespassing, so if Shimon's animal overeats to the point that it dies, so Shimon still bears some of that responsibility. Why? Because Reuven could say, look, you should have been a little bit more vigilant. So remember, if Shimon's animal goes ahead and just eats a bunch of fruit, so of course Reuven has no halachic recourse against Shimon. Why? Because he's trespassing, because he's there without Rishus. But at the end of the day, if it overeats to the point of death, in that case, Reuven says to Shimon, I'm sorry, I'm not responsible for the death of your animal. You should have been a little bit more vigilant in the care and watching over your animal. So it's an incredible distinction. It says the Gemara Meisvei, Ha'isha shenechnas alitchon chitin etzab ala ba'ayish lo b'shus. We'll say a woman trespasses and goes to grind wheat by her neighbor. So we'll say, so again, woman, we'll call her Sarah, has a friend, we'll call her Rachel. So Rachel has a friend, Rivka, Leah, right? I'm making this very, sorry. Rachel and Leah, we're going to keep, right? Names have been changed to protect the identities, right? So Rachel has a neighbor, Leah, and what happens? Rachel goes to Leah's property to grind her wheat. But she goes without Rishus, so she's trespassing. So Rachel's trespassing on Leah's property and grinding her wheat. And what happens? Leah's ox eats Rachel's wheat. So what's the halacha? Potter. So we'll say, obviously again, so ultimately again, Leah is not going to be chayeves for the fact that her ox ate Rachel's wheat, because Rachel is there illegally. However, again, if Leah's animal gets damaged through Rachel's wheat, then ultimately Rachel is going to be chayavis for damage done to Leah. Va'amai, but I don't understand. Now we're assuming over here, what's the case? The case is where Leah's animal ate Rachel's wheat, overate to the point that what? That it died. So if I don't understand, why should Rachel be chayavis? Va'amai, neima habi la shlotochal. Why doesn't Rachel say to Leah, What? Why did your animal overeat? Right? Why did your animal overeat? So what happens? Omri, umi adifa mimas nisin. But one second, why should this case be any different from the Mishnah? What was the case in the Mishnah? Dilkimna shahoch l'kabahen. So let's remember again, how did we set up the case of the Mishnah? The case of the Mishnah was the situation ultimately where what? Where the animal tripped over the produce, right? That was the case. Not where the animal, remember, we set up the case of the Mishnah as a case, remember, this is Rav's distinction, that the case of the Mishnah Rabosa is a case of where Reuven brought produce into Shimon's Rishus illegally. Shimon's animal slipped on the produce. That's going to be where Reuven is chayiv. So why should we assume that this brisa of the case of where Rachel brought her wheat into Leah's property, why don't we say same thing? It's a case of where Leah's animal slipped on Rachel's wheat and was damaged. That's where Rachel's going to be chayaves. So the Gemara says, this is not a case of consumption, this is a case of slippage. But the one who raised the question, why does he assume that this case of the Braise is different than the case of the Mishnah? So I will say, when you look at the reading of the Mishnah, the verbiage of the Mishnah was that Reuven brought the fruit into Shimon's Rishos, and what happens? Im huska bahen. So ultimately, the lashon is that Shimon's animal was huzak, was damaged bahen. Bahen means what? What? In it, through it, or by it. So by it is like a lashon of what? Like you could see, you could visualize how that lashon means what? Slipping on the fruit. Shochul gabahenu. Aval hocha katoni im huska. Rabosa, in the Braise, it says that what? That Leah's animal was huska, was damaged. Ultimately, again, was damaged by the wheat of Rachel. Below katani bahen, and the word bahen in it is missing, which I both say sounds like what? Achiluhu dikani. So, both without the bahen, it sounds like the damage that we are describing is what kind of damage? Damage through consumption and not through slippage. So the Gemara says, V'idach, the other opinion will say, Amar lecha loshna. The other opinion will say, no, don't get so caught up in one word, bahen, but rather, again, the yesod is the same, which is what I will say. Both the Braisa, as well as the Mishnah, are not talking about a case of consumption, but rather both are talking about a case of slippage. But Rabbi says, inachinami, in a case of consumption, we do accept Rav's distinction. Rav said what? In a case of where the owner of the field's animal overeats and dies, what does the owner of the produce say? You shouldn't have eaten. should have watched your animal. Who says your animal should overeat and die? You should have been a little bit more vigilant about the health and care of your animal. Tashma. Hechnis shor lechatzah balabayis shelo birshus. Just listen to the braisa. Person brings in his shor. Reuven brings in his ox into the chatzah of the balabayis without birshus of the balabayis. Va'achal chitin v'hitriz umes. So we'll say, now what happens in this case? So Reuven brings his shor into the chatzah of Shimon without birshus. Reuven's shor eats of Shimon's wheat without birshus. And what happens? The hitches, Rabosa, hitches literally means shulshul. It contracts diarrhea and dies as a result. Umes, and it dies. So what's the halacha? Pater. So Rabosa, who's pater in this case? Who's pater? Shimon, obviously, is pater, right? Shimon the Balabayas is pater. Why is he pater? Why is he pater? Because Reuven came in without rishos. He didn't have rishos. You trespassed. So you trespassed. Your animal ate my wheat, and then it got shulshul and died. That's your problem. That's not my problem. In hechnes birishos. But if at the end of the day, Reuven brought his shor into the rishos of the balabayis with rishos, with permission, then bala chatzer chayiv. Then ultimately, again, the owner of the property will be chayiv. So we'll say in this case, Reuven brought his animal into Shimon's domain with rishos. When the animal is there, Reuven's animal eats Shimon's wheat, contracts shulshul, and dies. So what's the halacha? The halacha is Shimon is responsible for the death of the animal. Va'amai. But why? According to what Rav said before, Havilei Shelo Yochal. We'll say, Rav Shita seems to be like this. You, as the owner of the animal, are responsible for what your animal eats. You can't watch every single step your animal makes, but you're absolutely responsible for the diet of your animal. Therefore, again, Lemaisa, even though Reuven has rishus to be in Shimon's property, Reuven should be vigilant about what his ox is eating. And if his ox eats wheat and contracts shulshul and die, so Shimon, the landowner, shouldn't be responsible for that. Reuven should be responsible for that. Amarava bereshus ashelo bereshus karamis. How can you compare these two cases? And we'll say Rav's distinction was talking about a case where there wasn't rishus. This is talking about a case where there was rishus. Bereshus shmiras shoro kibal alav v'achfilu chalak esatzma. And we'll say, so the Gemara says the same thing we said before, which is, and we'll say, when you give someone rishus to bring their animal into your domain, what are you saying? You are taking responsibility for the safety of that shar. So the same way you're not going to leave sharp objects lying on the ground, you're also not going to leave potentially dangerous wheat out as well. And therefore, Abosai, therefore, again, in that case, where the landowner gives rishus to the bala shar to come in, the landowner accepts responsibility to ensure the safety of the shar. If the shar eats bad wheat and dies, the landowner is going to be responsible for that. As opposed to Rabosai, when what? When ultimately, again, when there's not rishos, Rabosai, so in that case, without rishos, then obviously the landowner has no responsibility over what happens to the shor. But Rabosai, what it sounds like over here is that we do accept Rav's distinction, namely, that ultimately, again, if I trespass and I bring in produce, and let's say the balabas's shor slips on the produce, I am chayav for those damages. But if the balabas's shor overeats on the produce, it sounds like what? I, the owner of the produce, am not responsible for that because the balashar is responsible to be vigilant about the diet of a shari bailu. Let me just finish a couple lines. Heicha de kabel alei nitirus samal. So let's listen to this. So the Gemara says, let's go a few more lines. When I accept responsibility to watch the shar, so I'll say samal. So listen to this. So we'll say, here's the following situation. I have a chatzar. Reuven has a shor. I invite Reuven and his shor to come into my chatzar. Based on what we've learned, what does that invitation come with? That invitation means what? That invitation means I accept responsibility for the safety of Reuven and for the safety of his shor. Now the Gemara is going to ask, what is the scope of that responsibility for safety? Dina shehu de kabel alei. But say, here's the shayla. Am I accepting responsibility that I will not damage the shor, or do I guarantee the safety of the shor from all external influences. Look at Rashi. Hecha de kabbalei netiru say kigon rabbanan stama uvrabi de amar leknos sharachav ani eshmaranu de nafshe shelo yigachenu shara v'lo yishachenu kabbal. So we'll say, so in a case where I accept responsibility, according to the rabbanan, a stam invitation into my home comes with responsibility. According to Rebbe, I explicitly say I accept responsibility. When I accept responsibility, when I accept, so what does it mean to both say? So let's play this out. I say to Reuven, I'm inviting you and your shor into my home. According to the Rabbanan, that means I take responsibility for Reuven's safety, his shor's safety. What does that guarantee include? Is that guarantee mean I promise you that neither I nor my property will damage you, but I can't take responsibility about what anyone else will do to you while you are on my property? Or does it mean that I guarantee your safety from anyone and everything, not just me, but even from other influences as well? So the Gemara says, Tashma. You hear that Shaila? The meaning of the Nafkamin is going to be where what happens if Reuven's on my property, and what happens? Levi Shar comes charging in and gores him. Now, it's not my Shar, but it's someone's Shar that damaged him on my property. So if you say that the invitation to come into my property means I guarantee his safety, it's my property, then I'm responsible for not damaging from my property. But if Levi Shar comes charging in, that's not my problem. Or do we say that essentially, when you come into my property, I guarantee you like an Iron Dome type of existence, right? I guarantee you safety from any type of hezek. And therefore, if hezek occurs either from me or from someone else, I take responsibility for that. So Tashma, we learned, so Rav Yehuda Bar Simon taught in the Masechta of Nezikin, the Beit Karna. Beit Karna is the yeshiva. They taught, if you brought your fruit, so we'll say, if you brought your fruit into the chatz of the balabayis without rishus, and a shor came, someone else's shor. So we'll say, in this case, Reuven's bringing his peros into Shimon's rishus without Shimon's permission. And then what happens? An ox comes from someone else, from sorry, a third party's ox, comes along and eats the fruit. Potter, vim hechnis birishus chayiv. But however, again, if Reuven had rishus to bring his peros into Shimon's domain, and then what happens? Someone else's ox eats the peros. Potter ultimately is potter. One second. Man chayiv, man chayiv. I'm sorry. Man potter, uman chayiv. Who, when we say he is potter, who is chayiv? Who is potter? Who is chayiv? So the Gemara says, lav potter balachatzer, the chayiv balachatzer. Are we not talking about again that it's we're talking about the Bala Chatzar, that if Reuven brings his peros into the Chatzar without Rishus and someone else's ox comes along and eats the peros, then what? The Bala Chatzar is putter. If, however, again, the Bala Chatzar gave permission for Reuven to bring his peros in, and what? Someone else's shor comes along and eats the peros, the Bala Chatzar is chayv, which Shabbos sounds like what? When you give Rishus for someone to bring their property into your Rishus, that is an iron dome, right? Iron dome. I protect you from all types of damage that may occur, even from third party. To which the Gemara says, Amri lo, pater balashar, lechaye balashar. So we'll say, no, what it means is, listen to this, if Reuven brought his peros into the domain of Shimon without rishus, and Levi's shor comes along and eats the peros, so if Reuven brought it in without rishus, Levi's pater. But if Reuven brought his peros into Shimon's chatzar with rishus, then Levi is chayiv. So the Gemara says, "Vi balashar tap of memches, vi balashar my birshus my shalor birshus yiga." Supposed to listen to this. I don't understand. If we're talking about a third party's ox coming and eating Reuven's produce, then what does it matter if Reuven brought the produce into Shimon's rishus, into Shimon's chaser with rishus or without rishus? Supposed to say, watch this. Get ready. So the Gemara says, "Birshus Amri, Birshus Havi Leshein, Birshus Hanizak." We'll say, "Watch this. If Reuven has permission, if Reuven has rishus to bring his produce into Shimon's chatzer, which means I will say, then Shimon's chatzer becomes like what? Like Reuven's chatzer." right? And therefore, in other words, if Reuven has Rishus, then Shimon's Chatzar becomes like Reuven's Chatzar. If that's the case, then when Levi's animal comes in to Shimon's Chatzar and eats Reuven's produce, that is an act of shame that's happening in the Rishus of the Nizak, in the Rishus of the damaged party. Why is Rishus the damaged party? It's Shimon's Rishus, not Reuven's Rishus. Why is it Reuven's Rishus? Because Reuven has permission to be there. And what's the halacha? V'shem b'Rishus ha-Nizak chayeves. And you are chayev for shame committed in the Rishus of the Nizak. However, Shalom b'Rishus, Levi's chayev. Levi, right? Levi, the owner of the Shar is chayev. However, Shalom b'Rishus, we will say, watch this. If Reuven brought his produce into Shimon's chatzer without Shimon's Rishus, and now Levi comes along, Levi's ox comes along and eats Reuven's produce, which is in Shimon's chatzer without Shimon's Rishus, then what? Havi le shame, that is an act of shame. Bereshus harabim. Now, I must say, remember, it's not Bereshus harabim, it's in Shimon's Rishus. I must say, when it comes to Shane, anytime Shane is committed in a domain that does not belong to the damaged party, that is the equivalent to Shane happening in Rishus harabim. So if Reuven's produce is in Shimon's Rishus without Shimon's permission, then when Levi's animal comes and eats Reuven's produce, which is in Shimon's Rishus, without Shimon's permission, that's the equivalent of Shimon's animal eating Reuven's produce in Rishus Arabim. And what's the halacha with Shem Rishus Arabim? Shem Rishus Arabim will be Potter. Beautiful. So let's stop over here, but understand what we are leaving off with, just so you understand. We're leaving off still in the midst of trying to understand the nature of liability in someone else's Rishus. So we leave off still with the fundamental machlokas Rabbi and the Rabbanan. And that fundamental machlokas Rabbosai is, when you, and this has incredible nafkaminas, when you invite someone into your property, what does that invitation come with? According to the Rabbanan, that invitation comes with a guarantee for security for you and your possessions. I guarantee, when I invite you in, I guarantee you that you and your possessions will be secure. Therefore, if something happens to you, from you or from your possessions, even from a third party, Lemais, again, I assume responsibility for that. According to Rebbe, no. When I invite you into my home, I'm giving you rishus to come into my home. But what? Enter at your own risk. You're not trespassing, but enter at your own risk. According to the Rebbe, the only time that you assume responsibility is when you explicitly undertake responsibility. I will say, we'll pick up with this Emirat Hashem tomorrow. Beautiful, beautiful sugya. Mazel tov to the Haykins on the occasion of the wedding. We should be zochem Emirat Hashem to celebrate Smachot together for many years to come.
Who's pucker in the last case? Both Levi and Shimon?
In the last case, so Shimon.